Welcome, 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 everybody. It's another installment of JC and Morgan. The official clock says we are 81 days, 81 days, 3 hours and 7 minutes till the start of the 2026 college football campaign. We are less than that from the return of the pontiff of the Palmetto State, a man who needs no introduction. He has been on assignment. We didn't say where. Correspondent in Iran. Fighting off shells and bullets whizzing by his head to give the best coverage, unbiased coverage that you could have there. But he's back now out of his protective gear and ready to do what he does best besides defending our great nation. He also covers college football, and he does it on a different platform, which I'll let him explain that a little bit. JC, you've been gone for a while. You've had a lot on your plate.
Sure.
Many people that listen to this show, I know the chat room, and we love the chat room, folks. Occasionally, Chief Sports promotes this on a message alert system, notification. The rest of you might not be familiar with what else JC does. You know him as kind of a national figure, but he's also quite prominent. With a website called The Big Spur, and that has changed platforms, which I believe means we have changed platforms. But
yes,
all that being said, you're back and better than ever.
Yeah, we have changed platforms. In fact, Mike, I'm gonna I've looked at the numbers. We had to change platforms when I left 24/7 Sports because for some reason we had put it with them, and you couldn't take it with you. We're now with On Three. Everything is with On Three, and our podcast platform is portable still. So even if we weren't on Three, we're not going to have those disruptions again. You can get it. Obviously you can always get it on YouTube. But you can also, if you want to go sign back up for the podcast, and many of you have, because the numbers are identical. You just go to the JC and Morgan: a college football podcast. And we actually had it on a third platform in between the time between 24/7 Sports and On Three. But the move to On Three was just behind the scenes. It doesn't affect anybody. And you can always get it on Apple Pods, Spotify, Amazon, just wherever you get podcasts, man. It's all over the place. We've been doing it for 11 years. Certainly appreciate everybody that's stuck with it and stuck with me. While we've been, you know, doing website stuff, had some personal stuff we had to get done too. My father-in-law passed away right before we launched the new website, in another chapter of When It Rains, It Pours. And my wife's an only child, so I had to kind of deal with some stuff with that, with the mother-in-law. But we're back up and running, man. And it feels good.
It does feel good. It's good to have you back. And our parade guest list will continue. In recent weeks, Tim Brando, Tom Luganville. And I've been talking about this guy for a while, and I use his stuff to prepare for games. His guide, Phil Steele, a bunch of other stuff, scouring the internet. And one of the most common questions I get about play-by-play is, what does the preparation look like? And everybody likes to say they prepare more than the next guy. I watch a lot of tape. I even though I'm not an analyst, it helps. I'm a visual guy, so when I see players and the numbers and the names and it just helps me visually. But when I do read, and so many of people that do what I do like to brag about being a voracious reader, you know what? If you want a pat on the back for like reading prep material, that's mom stuff. I am very selective about what I read to prepare. There's some stuff that's out there that I'm just I don't trust it, or I don't feel great about it. This guy puts out stuff, and I'll be honest with you, I've never met him. We've never spoken on the phone. I don't know him. Part of the preparation that I do during anything, you got to get the pronunciations right. So I want to make sure that I got this right, because it's spelled with a C, has a lot of vowels, but it's Brett Ciancia. Ciancia. That's got a nice flow to it, doesn't it? And he is of Pick Six Previews, which I would recommend for those of you on Twitter or X. I don't know if he's on other social platforms like Instagram or not. We can ask him that. But Pick Six Previews is just really good. It's just it's a really good guide on every team, and he does rankings. And yes, he does predictions. And you know, I don't know how they judge this stuff, but he'll tell you that they've been very good in predictions. But we'll just chop it up with him. Just another voice to break down some things on the upcoming college football season, get a unique perspective. Yes, as it already has been mentioned in the chat box, and I do want to dive into the JC5 momentarily. The national story is on one Brendan Sorsby and what it all means and what it all is entailing, because if you haven't missed the news cycle over the last 24 hours, he has been, and for me, not surprisingly, because just learning how these, I've learned a lot about law lately with college athletics, JC. I never wanted to be a lawyer. I don't necessarily like the way the legal system has been here lately outside of sports. Yeah. But I've learned a lot. And what I've learned is these separate appeal cases that college athletes have been putting together, very often it goes in front of a local judge. That local judge is going to determine the fate of the player eligibility. And guess what? That local judge very often has a particular leaning toward one school. And that is the case in Lubbock. I don't have a hot take here, JC. I don't want to get, like, I've heard some national shows the last 24 hours and they've kind of pontificated the moralities and ethics of gambling and everything else. I do think there's some nuance to everything. So I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole. You may, if you want to. I'll just say this. Where have you folks been? And when I say you folks, I mean the talking heads. On this show, we have talked about for I don't know how many years, the moment you know you started opening up NIL and kind of kicking the NCAA to the curb and all the, it is the wild, wild west. I keep going back to that term. It's you should not be surprised by anything like this going forward until we have some type of collective bargaining. We all know the NCAA is toothless, has been for a while. We all know that everybody is out for their own best interest. That's the way college athletics has been built for over a century. So this shouldn't have been shocking news, JC. Like, they were going to find any gray area they could to have this kid play. And I know you're not a huge Sorsby guy. I'd be honest with you, I didn't watch a lot of Cincinnati football last year, so I don't have a strong take on him either way. But I know what people say, and I know the scout. Like, he certainly has ability. And the odds of Texas Tech being nationally relevant with him versus without are drastically different. So they were going to do everything they could to win this case, and they have. And so there it is. Your thoughts?
Yeah, as far as Sorsby goes, you know, assuming he does play, he's not your type of quarterback, Michael.
Well, I know he runs a lot, which I don't mind the running.
Runs. No, you like runners.
Yes.
We know the Mike Morgan. Yeah. Oh, there you go. There you go, brother.
Got to be accurate.
I know you. I know.
Yes, you do.
But maybe, you know, sometimes you have a year where you're not accurate, and there's a lot of reasons for that. And, mm-hmm. you know, you come back and you're fine. I think the judge shopping thing in our country is ridiculous. It happens in politics too, as we all know. Playing college football is not a right. That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard, although some people think it is. The attorney that defended him should be embarrassed. He's an embarrassing figure anyway, because in his opinion, you know, Title IX should apply to revenue share and NIL and all that.
This is the same guy that wins all these cases, right?
Nah, it's Kessler guy.
Oh, this is a different guy?
Wait a minute. Let me just look.
I'm sorry.
I've got him confused. Jeff, no, the Kessler was the Sorsby. He was the lead attorney in the house settlement. So I've got the wrong guy. I'm sorry.
But one of these guys, I just know, like, he's known as, if you're going to fight the NCAA for eligibility, you hire this guy and he wins, like, he's Better Call Saul. He's like 99% success rate. I can't remember if this is the guy or not.
Yeah, and I don't, you know, he is, because he won the house settlement, or got the house settlement done.
Okay.
There's another Title IX zealot guy out on the West Coast that was threatening to sue everybody, but that's not Jeffrey Kessler. I got the names confused. Anyway, I digress. Look, at some point it's still sports, right? You can't gamble on sports, and you can't gamble on your own team. That applies to adults and kids alike. And what kills me about it is, you know, we're sitting there talking about, you know, the Jeffrey Kesslers of the world and the people who stand to make millions of dollars and torpedo the sport even more and have lockouts and things and strikes and things like that. Like it's, you know, like they're the Teamsters. They stand to make millions of dollars if they head up the player union, right? And they're pushing for all this. And I guarantee you, all these people on X, the minute that happens with collective bargaining, they're going to be out there. Everybody's got a motivation. All right, so what is it? You know, my philosophy has always been pay them handsomely, but don't pay them stupidly. And everybody's paying them stupidly now. Okay, well, that's fine. To whom much is given, much is expected. That's the way the world is. That's the way reality is, not social media, not, oh, you know, whatever your brand is, not some courtroom in Texas or Mississippi or Tennessee or, you know, Massachusetts or California. There's a reality, and then there's a reality that an alternate reality that some of these folks in our society seem to live in. All right, so you can pay him $4 to $6 million. But then all of a sudden, oh, he's just a college kid. Okay. Look, dude. If you're in college and you break a law, or you, like, oh, let's say you cheat on an exam, it doesn't matter how much NIL money you're getting paid. You're getting kicked out of school and you're not going to be able to play football. And good luck suing a university for that if they've got you, because you're not going to win. There's just basic rules that are common sense. And that's another problem. There's no common sense in any of this. And you know, the fact that Texas Tech, you know, and the president and the AD acted like this guy was a victim. I mean, think about what's all happened with this kid. So he bolts on Cincinnati. I see you. They're suing him for $1 million. There are investigations in Ohio into gambling and things like that that are not criminal. I mean, I don't know if they're criminal investigations. It's not a big deal, you know. He admitted to gambling over $90,000 and admitted to betting on his own team. All right, Pete Rose got banned from the Baseball Hall of Fame, banned from baseball for life, went to his grave, banned from the sport that he put a lot into, right? The sport, not just college, because he bet on his own team. There's just in every sports league, be it pro, college, wherever, has rules against this. And you should not be able to go to court and get it overturned. And I think that, you know, with the way the NCAA does lose court cases, and they really don't lose all that. They win most of them, a lot of eligibility ones and stuff they've won. But these high profile ones, this is shocking. So in my opinion, as I've said all along, it is up to the schools to police this stuff. And Texas Tech and Cody Campbell and everybody else involved, I mean, it's like, man, you know, you're supposed to be a reformer, and then, oh, but what when it affects your team, it's like, oh, well, this is just a part of the – come on, man. What credibility do you have at that point? Just shut up and pay Texas Tech players. Stop trying to rig the system for your school. Okay? That's my message there. You've lost all credibility now. I don't care if President Trump likes you. It's ridiculous. That guy should not be involved in anything. He's clearly a Texas Tech booster parading as a reformer, which is dangerous. And I'm not saying any of the other reformers don't have their own biases. They all do. Everybody's in it for themselves. But there are certain things in sports that you just don't do because it affects the integrity of the game. I had a big problem with the NCAA not punishing Michigan for the Connor Stallions thing because that wasn't illegal phone calls, which they killed Harbaugh for. Illegal phone calls and contact during COVID, right? That was the whole big thing there. They killed him for that. Connor Stallions was illegally scouting. That gives you an advantage on game day. Nothing. Right?
Yeah,
things that affect the integrity of the game, you have to have universal enforcement. And then you come out and paint this guy as a victim, as your institution does. And everybody in the country knows you're spending money out the yang. You know, I'm Josh Brooks, the AD at Georgia. I don't know what they do in a playoff situation. Don't schedule them. Somebody said the softball coaches in the SEC soft, and he didn't schedule them. So,
yeah, I mean, there's talk about Big 12 teams boycotting. Honestly, I think that's ridiculous. You're gonna take a loss and derail your season off of this principle. If you don't want to schedule Texas Tech non-conference, great. Let me just push back on one thing on Cody Campbell. I'm not gonna sit here and show for Cody Campbell. I know him vaguely. I met him last year doing the Tech BYU game. We were gonna have him on the show last season.
He just lost me with that. Maybe he can get back.
I get it. You're everything you said is more than fair. I would just say this: if Cody Campbell's out of the equation, this lawsuit still happens. Like, this is not a Cody Campbell production. This is a Texas Tech production, and he ain't the only millionaire, oil and gas millionaire, billionaire in West Texas. I learned a lot about my trip to Lubbock this year. You can throw a rock and hit one of these guys, and they are all about getting Texas Tech relevant in everything. Cody's just the richest of the rich, but I assure you this would have still taken place with that same lawyer. Would you say his name was Jeffrey Kessler?
Anywhere.
Yeah. And let's not kid ourselves on this either. Texas Tech isn't the only school that would have done this.
Oh, I agree. Do you think Georgia would have done it? Do you think Kirby Smart would have done it? No.
Kirby Smart doesn't need to do it. Just like Nick Saban didn't need to do it. They're already national powers. But
Texas Tech has the 10th, 5th best roster in the country. Did they not have a backup quarterback that's worth a flip?
Apparently, they don't think so. I mean, even last year, the Morton kid, as good as Texas Tech was last year, and they did make a playoff, and they didn't have a good quarterback. I mean, I sat there and watched that kid for four quarters, and then you saw in the playoff game, he was overmatched. I mean, he just wasn't – that was their Achilles heel. They didn't have a good quarterback. So if you're going to make the next level, this clearly is the kid they think is way ahead of number two. Or you don't go through all this trouble and backlash to get him eligible. So to answer your question, no, I don't think Kirby would do it. I don't think old Nick Saban would have done it if he was still the coach at Alabama. I don't think most of the national powers that already have a bona fide starting playoff caliber quarterback would do it, or a backup for that matter. But if you're Texas Tech, it doesn't shock me. Look, I'm not here to defend Texas Tech. I'm not here to defend the lawsuit. I'm just telling you, everybody is looking out for their own best interest, yeah. And I am not surprised. The moment this went to a local courtroom, and all you got to do is look at, like, I think the initial judge recused him or herself because they had deep ties to Texas Tech, so they bring in somebody else who has deep ties to Texas Tech.
The whole appeals panel, all four appellate judges are Texas
all Red Raiders. All guns up, baby.
It's not
the mass Raider behind me,
dude. If you're a judge, you're deciding important things, right? This is not in the grand scheme of things. Some judges I can think to. Oh, just let them play. Just let him play, Mike. Yeah, it's just a game, you know? And I think people know that. So,
and again, I am not, like, you don't have to tell me gambling on your own team. No bueno. I will say this. When he did it, he's basically in street clothes for Indiana as a, I don't know what string. It's a little bit different than if you're the starting quarterback and you're compromised, right? If you're truly like the biggest fear that we have in college athletics has always been point shaving, because that is the one that truly can pollute the actual outcome of games. And there's so much that has gone on that we don't know about.
Oh, God.
Yeah. I'm sure you've heard the same rumors I have about a number of kids at a number of programs, especially before NIL. You can't, I mean, when these kids have got, you know, they're basically not getting a true income, always the bag man, but they're not getting a true income. And all of a sudden, somebody gets their hooks in you. You're compromised, and you're out there. If you're a basketball player, who cares if we win? But I hate to do a blue chips quote here, but we still won the damn game. Who cares if we covered the spread? Same thing in football. And if you're the starting quarterback, you can really affect the outcome of a game. Again, doesn't excuse it, but he's not. He was a blip on the radar at Indiana at that point. I don't think he ever got in the game, did he? So, bottom line, what's that?
He played some, but you just.
Yeah, I get it. It's bad. Well, it's another indicator of we have a problem in a rudderless ship of college athletics. But yeah, that's the point.
And you're right, Mike. It's one of those things where you can't trace point shaving. You confront a guy. Well, why did you not take a knee? And
right.
Or why'd you throw that pick six late? That's not like you. Well, sorry, coach. Why'd you miss that jumper?
Yeah.
Well, sorry, coach. That's why they have rules against gambling on your own, especially on your own team.
Yeah.
Just don't do your own team. I mean, man, there's so many games every night. You want some action? It's legal now in most states. Just go do the action elsewhere, dude. I mean, you probably are pretty good at it.
I'm glad you mentioned that. One other thing I'm hearing being preached, not by the people that have sponsorships. I mean, you and I would not turn down a deal from FanDuel right about now. The whole notion of, well, you can't blame these kids. I mean, there's gambling commercials all over the games. You see DraftKings all over. You see point spreads on the ticker. Point spreads have been on the ticker for, I don't know, 30 years. It used to be illegal. Even the NFL was not allowed to talk about point spreads back in like the Jimmy the Greek days. He couldn't say the Cowboys will cover the 3.5, Brent. He had to say, I think the Cowboys will win by a touchdown. That was his way of saying they'll cover. X-Man saying, I disagree, Mike. Doesn't matter if you're first or fifth ring. I understand. I'm not saying it's okay. Yes, you're still compromised. I'm just saying, I would want to know if this kid actually played, because then I'd have to look at the games themselves and see if they're on the level. You see what I'm saying? And then we have a bigger issue at that point. Everybody knows this is bad. Everybody knows this is illegal. Everybody knows it can't be tolerated, so on and so forth. I'm just saying, I'm not surprised it went down the way that it did. And if you're thinking it's going to be overturned on appeal, the appeal process could last 9 to 12 months. I don't think anything happens. I think this kid takes a 2-game suspension against whatever cupcake in week one, then Oregon State in week two, and then it's guns up and ready to take on a 9-game Big 12 slate and try to get back to a playoff, which I don't think they're going to be as good as last year. As the strength of that team was really their defense, and they lost a lot, including David Bailey from it. Anyway, we had to touch on that. There's a lot of other things we want to get to, including the JC5. We backed up a little bit. Brent Ciancio said he could go 9:30. So are you up for a 5, JC?
Yes. I have to hurry, though. I've got some a cascading waterfall of breaking news on the other side.
Oh, my goodness.
It's going to happen, but it's okay.
All right. Okay.
We're still in the cockpit or the, all right, the co-pilot's chair.
Fire up the 5, please.
It's time for the top topics in the sport. We bring the JC5. Number 1.
All right. So there was more controversy with this Saving College Sports Act. And I want to focus very narrowly, Mike, on one part of it, because you're in the world. As Bill King always says to me when we talk NIL and recruiting, he's like, you're in this world, JC. Mike, you're in this world. You're in on the SEC network. You're at ESPN. You know this business more than me. Would pooling all of the media rights, all of college sports, lead to, as the pro pool people say, more revenue for the Big Ten and SEC?
I will tell you, the SEC does not think so, and they're not for it.
Oh, no, yeah, they're against it.
So smarter people than me, somebody, the bean counters at the SEC have clearly looked into this. The SEC and the Big Ten make a hell of a lot more money on television than the Big 12 and the ACC. So their point is, why do we want to average it down to help them out when we control our own media deals, which the SEC, Big 12 does. We have our own networks, which they do. And we have the ability to bring in, in our eyes, we've looked at it. We make X amount of dollars with it, unregulated or unpooled. We make X amount of dollars pooled. They clearly have done the calculus on this, and it's less. So I don't see that happening anytime soon.
Okay. I am with you there, unless, you know, cooler heads prevail on that.
Number two.
Okay. All right. So on that same note, they're worried about a Super League. Now, me, man, I've never gotten the sense the Big Ten and SEC would combine. I kind of got the sense maybe they'd have a loose partnership and they'd raid the other two leagues and have two Super Leagues and kind of coexist. Mm-hmm. Are you buying Senator Ted Cruz's concern that that there was some talk that the two leagues would actually combine? They're very different.
I don't think it's happening. I think that is the in case of emergency, break glass, and here's our threat to you, Big 12, to you, ACC, to you, Group of Six. So we now got to include the pack in that. I don't think they want to do that. They're not like buddies, you know. Sankey and Petiti are not going to neon bowling night at the local alley and celebrating who gets the first turkey. That's three consecutive strikes. I've done that twice in my life. It's banner day when you do it. No, I don't see that happening. I think that's leverage of, it's a threat. It's basically, if you guys keep complaining that there's not enough equity in this whole thing, if you're upset that we're making, I'm just throwing out a number, $50 million a year more in TV revenue than you are, and you're threatening us, we can just join the Super League, and then you're really going to find life miserable. Because at that point, the ACC and the Big 12 almost become part of the Group Six. They really do. If the SEC and Big 10 merged, I don't want to say the lights are out. You're still going to play, but you're going to be up the creek without a paddle. So I say no.
Number three.
All right, Lincoln Riley. I said Lincoln Riley at Ole Miss. Yeah, Pete Golding doesn't work out. I can see Lincoln Riley resurfaced in Oxford.
Lincoln needs to improve his stock a little bit.
All right, so
a bit of a hit. Number one recruiting class, though, right?
Yeah, as of now, you know, I don't think it matters, man. They always recruit well. I think the problem with Lincoln Riley's teams is always been the problem with Lincoln Riley's teams, that they don't play defense, they're not particularly tough, and now they're in a line of scrimmage league. However, they had a pretty good year last year. And when all is said and done, you know, I think, well, they're 10-3, something like that, 9-4. He's got his quarterback back. The guy that transferred in from UNLV. So you know, it's one of those things. How hot is his seat, and do you think he'll survive?
I think it's extremely hot, but I think he survives because it's Southern Cal. It's not the same pressure cooker of the coaches, say, in an SEC setting or Big Ten setting. And they, without knowing the full details of the contract, something tells me, JC, it would cost a lot of money to get rid of him. and they've already invested so much money to have him. So it's like, first off, you're admitting you had one of the worst hires in school history, right? Because you put everything. People have to remember, when that hire was made, I know the numbers have all changed. When that hire is made, what they gave Lincoln Riley was almost unprecedented. And so I just don't see them making a move. I don't. If we're doing a hot seat list, which I'm sure will come up between now and week zero, he's not in my top five, but he'd probably be in the top 10. And I do think it's, here's what I think more importantly than hot seat. I think people are ultimately going to judge Lincoln Riley on this year, whether or not this has been any kind of success and whether or not you're trending in the right direction. If this doesn't go, like we're still in a 12-team playoff era. If they don't sniff it, I think people are going to look at it and go, yeah, he ain't Pete Carroll. This is not what we signed up for. We signed up for Pete Carroll. We paid for Pete Carroll results. We paid for 3 national championships in 4 years and Heisman Trophy winners and an electric offense complemented by a Polamalu-type defense and beasts off the edge and hard-hitting linebackers. You haven't had much of that so far in L.A.
Number four.
Bobby Petrino is the offensive coordinator at North Carolina. We had a North Carolina fan invade our chat box on the other show the other day. I started looking up. I forgot about that. I haven't been high on Belichick. I'm not high on his general manager in general. But, dude, would you agree that Bobby Petrino still has it and can manufacture some offense, don't you think?
Yeah. You don't lose that skill of play calling, not the kind that he has. It's not like he's running the triple option and that's just an antiquated scheme that doesn't work anymore. He can still dissect, like even with Arkansas, as bad as they were, there were games where they had a ton of points. They just couldn't defend you and me playing a game of catch. They were awful. And they didn't have great wide receivers. And Talon Green never got better. But if you give him the right personnel, yeah, I think Petrino can still dial up good plays. I just don't know. I haven't looked at the Tar Heel too deep here lately. I don't know if there's enough there. It's going to be an improvement over what it's been, yes. But I don't know if that all of a sudden saves what last year was an unmitigated disaster with Bill Belichick. Good question. These are all great questions, by the way. Let me just say that.
I know. It is the most distracted I've ever been. I mean,
all right, quick number five, and then we'll break.
Yeah,
then
we'll break.
If I have to, I'll go Brett Solo.
Yeah, bro. You may need to. And I knew this was going to happen.
Is this a baseball coaching story?
Yes, it is. And all right, Gators and ground and pound. So I like Jaden Ball. I'm a little concerned about their quarterback situation, although I think Philo could be pretty good running the system.
Yep.
I don't know. The offensive line shaky, but they returned 69% of their defensive production. Could we see a return to the Galen Hall days in Florida where the Gators are winning games 13-3?
And being put on probation? Is that where you were going? Because that was the Galen Hall era. Steve Spurrier should have a 7th SEC title for 1990. Yeah. That was all his players that did nothing wrong, but Galen Hall got him on probation. Anyway, I would just say this on the – here's what I've noticed. I've been in Kentucky. I've been in Alabama since the hire there. I haven't been in Baton Rouge. No, I was in Baton Rouge. I take that back. I've been in all these – cities or areas where the 4 SEC coaching changes took place. Everybody knows Lane is right now can walk on water up until he loses his first game, and then they'll want to plunk him after the second loss. But you go to Kentucky, oh man, we love Will Stein. You go to Florida, oh yeah, John Summerall, this guy, this is the difference, man. He ain't like Billy Napier. You go to Auburn, oh yeah, Golish, like we knew all along Hugh Freeze was a bad hire, but this guy. You can always just do that when you make a new hire. The last guy's a bum. The last guy's an idiot. Same thing with all these offensive coordinator hires in the SEC. It was all the other guy's fault. Now we're going to be so much better. I'm not convinced of any of that. I don't know. Will Florida be better? They better be. I mean, goodness gracious. They were a colossal disappointment last year. I do think their roster, forget about Summerall and the speeches and the recruiting. I think their roster is better this year, and it can't be more disappointing a quarterback, no matter who it is, I think it'll be Philo, than DJ Lagway was last year. So, yes, I think there's improvement there. Do I think Florida is a playoff contender, an SEC championship contender? No, I don't. All right. JC is going to tell everybody who a certain school is going to be hiring for a baseball coach here within minutes.
Yes. All right. So, yeah. Good to be with you, Mike.
I've enjoyed it.
I'm Brett, I'm a big fan of his, and I was looking forward to talking to him, but these days, it's just, I hate it. But
It's okay. Look, anyway, can I ask you this?
Yes.
Is it the same coach that I thought it would be for the last 2.5 months?
If I said that now, everybody's going to go run with it, Mike.
So. Well, I thought you were you're not breaking news. You're breaking
there's part a of the technical news. Part of it. Anyway.
Okay. All right. I got you.
I answered you in the chat box. See ya.
Okay. JC is out. Brett Ciancia is in. When we return, we'll talk more college football with the purveyor of Pick Six previews on the other side of this timeout. Okay. We are back. It is another installment of JC and Morgan. JC had to step aside. He's hunting down a story. A number of people in our audience will know what that story is all about. And I can just tell you it's the same person I thought it's been for 2.5 months. But that's a whole other story. We'll get into that. We're here about college football right now and today. And as I mentioned this at the top, Brett, you and I have never met. But I use your guide in preparing for announcing college football games. And I think it's as good as anything out there. I read yours and I read Phil Steele, and no knock on the other ones because there are several. The other ones don't do a whole lot for me just in terms of information necessarily. But let me first see if I can not screw this up because I'm big on pronunciations. Brett Ciancia.
You nailed it. Yeah, I appreciate that.
Boom!
Okay. The phrase of the book. Yeah, you got it.
Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time. No, that's But I did want to get that because it's funny. I've been reading your stuff, and the whole time I'm like, you know, I really don't know how to pronounce this name.
It's a tough one. It's Italian, but you crushed it. And
Well, I'm part Italian as well, so with all the vowels, I figured it was something. There was a Paisan element in there, but I still could have gone a number of ways. So I know a lot of our listeners know your stuff. They don't necessarily, you know, you're not out there publicly. This is the first time we've seen your face or maybe heard your voice, but they know your guide and they speak very well of it just like I do. So all that being said, tell us, where are you? How did you get into this? What was the impetus to put together in a very crowded and competitive space, a college football guide / season preview?
Yeah, well, first off, thanks so much for the praise and for having me on. I really appreciate it. It's preview season, so we're coming down the home stretch here for the 2026 edition. But how I got started, I'm based in southeastern Pennsylvania. It's really a pro sports area. It's all Philadelphia Eagles talk. You got the Philly Sixers Flyers and then Big Five basketball in March. But not as much college football coverage as I wanted. I loved the sport growing up. My dad introduced me to the sport. Got to travel all across the country for games. But just love college football and wanted to put together a product that other diehards would love. And I try and bring a mix of everything. You know, I have advanced stats that I've designed that are successful at picking seasons and picking game outcomes. So I have the numbers aspect, but putting it back into readable terms, you know, because I want to learn about schemes, X's and O's, even some program histories. So I try and put everything that I would have wanted in a preview magazine into this one, into Pick Six Previews. A couple other things too. It's a one-man show, so I'm doing all 68 Power Four teams. There's no other staff at all here, so it gives you an objective view at all 68 compared against each other. So I think that's a little bit unique compared to the other magazines out there. And then lastly is the accuracy piece because they're keeping score of this, and I wanted to win. Mm-hmm. I'm competitive, and sure. They grade who the most accurate predictors are amongst all the preview magazines. I launched in 2013. I won the title right away. And then I've held it every 5 year and 10 year interval since. They do a 10 year interval. So when I became eligible there in 2022, I won it that year. In 23 and 24, 25, I've continued the tradition. So that's kind of the you know, the credential on the side there to have that that backing. But yeah, that's Pick Six Previews. Talk to head coaches, talk to coordinators, a lot of local media. Just try and get the most up to date and also interesting and enjoyable college football preview out there. You know.
Yeah, and I, again, this is no knock on, I've broadcasted many G5, G6 games. I've done Maction on a Wednesday night. I've done a Sunbelt game on a Thursday. There are other guys that'll give you great intel on that too. So this is not, you know, being, as I like to joke on this show, we're not Power 4 elitists on this show. But I, what I love about the fact that you just cover the 68 is that when you do those rankings, because it's so hard in college football, and unlike the NFL, like I don't care what a guy's quarterback ranking is against a 1AA opponent. I don't want to know, oh yeah, he's number two nationally in this, but the cat at Eastern Michigan is number one. Well, clearly those are two different levels of football. So you just kind of keep it within that one pool of the 68, which I think gives people a more accurate ranking of the things that you rank. And you rank a lot of stuff. And I'm guessing as you're predicting and forecasting things, are you a big analytical guy? You mentioned you talk to coaches. How much of it is just pure data in, data out versus feel for what you think is going to happen?
Well, I'd say it's really a holistic approach here. I know that's maybe a cop-out answer, but it's really everything. I think you have to be elite at everything to be able to forecast the season and a game. The analytics is a key piece. And what that's, you know, years and years of developing formulas, what I find are the most important variables in predicting a game. And then also what I like to do is I adjust for opponent strength, because you mentioned it there talking about MAC and Sunbelt, you know, putting up 500 yards against a Sunbelt team is a lot different than doing it against Georgia's defense, you know? Right. So I like to adjust for opponent strength. I like to look at it on a per play basis to adjust for different tempo styles that you find. You got Ole Miss going, or I guess Lane Kiffin going 80 snaps a game. You got Iowa going 50 snaps a game. So I love the per play and the opponent adjusted, but again, those are just numbers. And we know football is a person business. It's X's and O's, it's schemes, it's personnel. So what I do is in the off season, this is why it takes 6 months, 7 months to produce the preview magazine. I go every single position group by position group on every team, look at who's in, who's out from last year, the transfers, where they came from, why they left, why they came, what were their ratings in high school, what were their ratings as a transfer. It takes months and months to do this. Lastly, talking to head coaches and coordinators too, to put it in the context of, hey, who's standing out in spring? What are you trying to achieve with this new scheme? So it's really holistic. I try and put it all together into a readable, interesting, you know, palatable preview. And I think I've accomplished that. And to your point about Power 4, you're getting twice as much data now, twice the page count, you know, twice the word count on each Power 4 team. I don't actually have space for the G5 right now, which is a one-man show. So with that, down on Power 4, and you're getting the most detailed you can find.
I'm also a big yards per play guy, by the way. We were talking about that on another show the other day about, you know, you can feast on G5 1AA schools and kind of tilt the scale on numbers. You can, depending on what kind of offense you run, your defense could be on the field more, but yards per play is a pretty good. If you're going to pick like one number, that's right up there for me. So I like the fact that you do that. I like the fact that, as you mentioned, there's more data on each team than your average guide. All right. So with all that being said, let's get down to the nitty gritty. You mentioned like it's not a race to be first. You want to have the most accuracy and the best information. So your guide is not available yet. You're talking July, right? Early to mid-July.
Yeah, we're aiming for a July 4th release, like usual, right around early July. And that puts me one of the later, if not the latest, magazine out there. Part of that was because of the installation of the transfer portal. I mean, that really delayed the process for me. It used to be very formulaic. You'd look at the high school recruiting rankings. You look at who went pro early or who's coming back to college, and that was your roster. Now you're talking almost an entire new class every single year of guys in and out from the transfer portal. So I try and wait as long as possible. I try and get, you know, spring reports, even some summer notes coming in. So, yeah, looking like a July release. You can go pre-order. You can look at samples on picksixpreviews.com. I always put a lot of samples so you can see what we're talking about here, see the layout, the page layout, the categories of stats you're going to get. So that's all on there. You can see the Ohio State preview from last year. But yeah, July release. And then it becomes radio and podcast season. So I hope to come back on once we're published so I can really talk all the predictions, rankings, and do a little debating with you guys on how it all shook out. But yeah, it's an all-out sprint to the finish line right now. I've got about 10 more teams to preview and write, and then it's editing, designing, all that good stuff. So we're coming down the stretch here.
Yeah, I'll have my copy in hand then, and I'll be able to kind of grill you on some questions a little bit more in depth. But let's take kind of a treetop view. I know the last time we corresponded, you weren't done with the SEC yet, but I'm just curious, based on what you have been able to compile, everybody and their grandmother is picking Texas and Georgia on the top and at the top in no particular order. Do you differ from that at all?
Well, they're certainly good candidates. I mean, you look at the high school recruiting, profile of both these teams. Georgia, I mean, you look at the four classes of players that are going to be on the field this year, going back from 2023 till the current class. Number one, number two, number one again, and then a number six this year. Add in seven more four-star transfers this year. It's just a conveyor belt of five-star talent down there. It's unbelievable when you look position by position. I mean, the linebackers, I think there's four or five stars in the linebacker room. And it's quite the contrast when you go from like a Wake Forest or a Boston College to then a Georgia. And it's like, oh, here are all the five stars. You know, they're all in Athens. So really a ton of talent there. They got Gunnar Stockton back. I thought they did a good job retaining as well. They didn't lose a single starter to the portal. So all those four-star, five-star guys are all back in Athens this year. Definitely a candidate for the playoff. You should, pencil them in every year almost at this point. Texas, I haven't previewed yet, so I don't want to give any bad intel there. I know they have Arch Manning back. I know they signed arguably the best transfer class again, just talent at every position. They're due for a bounce back. A team that I'm fading a little bit from last year that was a playoff team I think might be out this time around is Texas A&M. A special season last year. I like Mike Elko a lot. He's a great head coach. But you just look at the personnel that they lost on both lines of scrimmages. Mm-hmm. I think it's eight starters gone from the O-line and the D-line combined. These are NFL guys. These are high picks. All SEC caliber guys gone. So a complete rebuild of the trenches is not a good formula here for 2026. So it's a little bit there. I think the most exciting storyline is LSU with Lane Kiffin. Just not so much the off the field drama, although that will be nice and spicy come September in Oxford, Mississippi on September 18th. But just the amount of talent that he brought into LSU this year, 11 starters off other Power Four rosters, unbelievable, unprecedented. So, and that's on top of a strong recruiting profile at LSU. So, those are some storylines there. It's a really deep conference. Of course, you guys know that being based in the South, that's no shocker, but a lot of contenders for the playoff.
How about an Ole Miss squad that lost Lane Kiffin to LSU, but managed to win their court case with Trinidad Chambliss coming back. They have a terrific running back and Lacy. They always seem to have good wide receivers. Defensively, it's kind of been hit or miss over the years in Oxford, but where do you have Ole Miss? Again, not necessarily a specific ranking. I know you haven't finished, but how do you forecast Ole Miss this year?
Yeah, certainly. I think I learned a lot about Ole Miss in the playoff after the Kiffin drama. They really bonded as a team. Pete Golding really assumed the head coach role well, rattled off a couple playoff wins. I was really impressed with them. You bring back a lot of that roster. You know, everyone thought that Kiffin was going to raid them and take, 5, 10, 15 key players from the team. I count just three starters. Maybe if you count Winston and the receiver, maybe make it four. But most of that Ole Miss team is back. Trinidad Chambliss returning is a total game changer. That instantly makes him a playoff contender right again. The way that he makes all these highlight reel plays. He's also now, think of this, he didn't even have a spring ball last year in the SEC. He was coming from D2. Now he gets a whole extra year as the full-time starter there. I think he's going to be a Heisman favorite. And Pete Golding, another strong defense. They're a little bit older on that side of the ball this year. A lot of starters back. So yeah, I think you keep them right there in that top 10 mix. Certainly a playoff contender. I definitely have them above Texas A&M if you're going looking at last year's playoff contenders. But yeah, they're back and they're reloaded.
How about some candidates for most improved? You've got teams with new head coaches like an Auburn with Golish. You have teams with a new OC like a South Carolina with Briles and a three-year starter at quarterback that going into last year was a Heisman Trophy candidate. A down year, but certainly they believe with the changes that were made, there could be a major improvement there. Florida's another team, new head coach, that there's excitement there. When you take a look at some teams that might be the biggest risers in 2026 in this league, any candidates that jump out?
Yeah, I'll throw one in there, Kentucky. If you're looking at most improved, I mean, that's a very low starting point. So I think that what were 4-8 last year, I think they can get back to bowl season. They could be a mover and shaker here. I'm not saying they're going to win the conference or anything, but improvement, I think Kentucky. I was really impressed with what Will Stein was able to accomplish in his first transfer class. Brought in levels of talent that we haven't seen under Mark Stoops. Now, Stoops was, he was really good at going into the Midwest, into his roots in Ohio, Michigan, and bringing three-star guys in and developing them, a big culture guy, powerful offensive lines after 4 or 5 years of development. But that model has been shaken up now. Now it's transfers, it's instant change, and I think Will Stein brings that. It's an exciting offensive scheme he's got. A lot of nice pieces to play with there. Kenny Minchie coming down from Notre Dame, who barely lost to C.J. Carr last fall in the fall camp battle. So I think Kentucky, they're poised for a bowl bounce back. But yeah, a lot of coaching changes over here. I mean, we talked Kiffin already at LSU. Auburn, Arkansas, Florida, a lot of movers here. I'll go with Kentucky. I don't think anyone's really covering them, but look for improvement there.
Yeah, I think you bring up the best point with Kentucky. Minchie damn near beat Carr out, and a lot of people think Carr's a Heisman Trophy candidate this year in South Bend. This is going to segue nicely, I hope, into Big Ten. The Big Ten has won the last three national championships with three different teams. The SEC hasn't been in the title game for the last 3 years, which nobody could have imagined 4 years ago ever happening. When you start crunching all your numbers and data, is there anything that jumps off the page saying this has been synonymous with the turnaround? I don't think anybody argues the Big Ten's deeper top to bottom, but clearly they have had the best team 3 years running. And I would make an argument that, you know, the top three or four has been very brag worthy in the Big Ten conference. So you could pound your chest and say you're the deepest league, and that's great, but at the end of the day, what people are going to remember is what league brought home the trophy, and that has been the Big Ten. So what has been the biggest source for the ascension of that conference as right now the champion?
Well, I think it's interesting. You look at those three examples because, you know, national titles are won by specific programs, not the overall conference. So you look at these three examples, very different paths to the title. I think you look at Michigan in 23, that was a very veteran team. They were all coming back and they could have gone pro. A lot of those linemen came back. It was the best offensive line in the country, a power run game, grind you down defense, and they won it. The next year with Ohio State, this was just a superpower team. This is what I called the NFL's 33rd team. It was five stars everywhere, first round picks everywhere. And they caught lightning in a bottle there in January, made a playoff run. And then with Indiana, I mean, this was unprecedented. We never seen anything like this, what Kurt Cignetti pulled off. A lot of James Madison transfers came with them. It was under recruited guys, gems that he had found and coached up, great coordinators. And then they found a Heisman winner out of Cal with Fernando Mendoza. So just three completely different paths. You know, it'd be easy if they were all just the ace recruiters. If it was all just the Georgia, Bama, Ohio State five-star rosters, then you could predict that better. But these are so three different stories. But I agree with you. I think that, you know, those national title tier, the Big Ten can now punch with the SEC at the top. But if you go down to the bottom tier, I think that's where the SEC still remains the deepest. You know, you got some really struggling teams in the Big Ten. You got Purdue, you got Rutgers. Where has Nebraska been? You know, so the SEC, I think, is deeper. Once you get past that middle tier into the bottom tier. I'll tell you what, though. I think you have a fourth Big Ten team about to win a national title. And, you know, I'm not going to pull the trigger on it yet, but I'm really considering going with Oregon to win the national title. I thought you might say that.
Yeah.
I actually put in last year's book, if you look at the Oregon page in 2025, I said, Oregon's my pick for the national title in 26, next year. And here we are. It's next year. And they're ahead of schedule. I think they're a serious contender for the national title.
Well, having Dante Moore come back, I mean, that, again, pre-NIL, that just would not have happened. He was a guaranteed top 10 pick. You don't turn down that kind of money to play an extra year. I don't care how much you love Eugene. But he's going to get paid, going to make a lot of money. He's going to get better. And then who knows? It could be down between him, Arch Manning. It's going to be an uber-deep quarterback draft, unlike this past one, which you were just struggling to find a second guy worthy of a pick. It wound up being Ty Simpson. So I don't think you're out of left field with that. I think Oregon certainly has that kind of potential this year. If only they could just find some money from somebody, then I think they'd really be in great shape. It is kind of similar question. Somebody from the Big Ten, because we're used to the same old names in that league, it hasn't exactly been a whole lot of variety, with the notable exception of Indiana, of course. But now we're talking about Indiana as almost like they're a blue blood. Like, we expect them to be great every year, as long as they keep hitting on portal quarterbacks and developing players the way Cignetti does. But what about a team that maybe people are not talking about as much in the Big Ten, that hasn't had that recent championship pedigree, that could be a big player?
Yeah, well, it's two names that you don't usually consider with the Big Ten because they came from out west in that expansion package. But USC and Washington are teams I'm really looking at as sleepers. I was high on both of them last year, and they impressed. First with USC, the key with Lincoln Riley was, can he survive and can he win enough in 2025 to then get to coach this elite recruiting class that he signed in 2025? Because, hot seat was turned up, but he did enough. He won 9 games. Now he's got this number one recruiting class coming in, just 5 stars boosting at every position group. So Jaden Maiava back at quarterback, it's going to be a top 5 offense with Riley calling it. And I think they did enough on defense to be a serious playoff contender. So if there's ever been a playoff or bust season for USC, I think this is the shot at it. And then maybe a little bit notch below, but still a top 25 contender, would be Washington. I've been high on Jed Fish for a long time, even what he did at Arizona. And he's got his quarterback back with Damon Williams. I know there was some offseason drama there for a couple of days, but he's back in Seattle. A lot of stars around him. I like their defense. Look at USC and Washington, teams you wouldn't normally think of within a Big Ten discussion, but they're in there now after expansion, and they're legit. So I would look at those two. I'll throw in Michigan. I know that they've been in the mix for a while, but I am really intrigued to see what Kyle Whittingham does up there. I've always loved what he's built at Utah. It was more of a longer-term build. He would have them for 4, 5, 6 seasons. But now in this modern era, it's more instant change. We'll see what he does with that. He brought a lot of Utes with him, brought some great coordinators too, with Beck coming in, Jason Beck, his offensive coordinator at Utah, Jay Hill from BYU, a lot to like from Michigan.
If ever there was a fit to kind of get back to where Harbaugh discipline, the blocking and tackling, like that's Whittingham. If you watched Utah and you watched how he would just win conference titles with lesser talent in whatever league he was in, that makes sense. And you replace a guy who I guess was working on a career as like the understudy of P. Diddy. So I think that Ann Arbor will be in much better shape. Wrapping things up with Brett Ciancia of Pick 6 Previews. Again, his first trip here to the program. We're brought to you in part by Advocare. Again, advocare.com. Promo code Mike Morgan will get you 20% off all the great items there, from Spark to Rehydrate. If you have trouble sleeping, if you have things you need for a workout, post-workout, it's all one-stop shop delivered to your door. No meatheads at the local GNC. Just go to advocare.com. Again, promo code Mike Morgan will save you 20% off your entire order. Okay, we got to at least touch on real quick before we wrap up ACC, Big 12, just some overall thoughts on those two leagues heading into the year.
I think in the ACC, I think that the crown has been passed from Clemson to Miami. I really think it's, the Clemson dynasty has ended. I think that with Miami, you have an ascendant program here. They showed it off in the playoff run last year, and I think they were even ahead of schedule last year. A lot of that talent is back for 2026. I even think they upgraded a quarterback. I know Carson Beck was very veteran, very experienced, made a lot of key plays for them. But Darian Mensah is a gunslinger. I mean, he's more in the Cam Ward Miami quarterback skill set. I mean, he's going to bomb it. I think he had the most downfield shots of any quarterback last year, if you look at it statistically. Brings his number one receiver with him from Duke and Cooper Barkate, and then just a ton of 5 stars on this roster. A little bit of question at offensive line, but if you're ever going to question a program, it shouldn't be Mario Cristobal's ability to build a line. Him and Alex Mirabal, two of the best line builders in the country. Mm-hmm. So I love Miami to win that conference. I think that they're head and shoulders ahead of the rest of the league. A sleeper from the ACC, I'll throw Louisville in there. Mm-hmm. I had a chance to talk with Coach Brohm. Really impressed with what he brought in from the transfer portal. A little bit different style of quarterback than you're used to at Louisville. He's got Lincoln Kienholz coming in from Ohio State, a bigger build, a physical guy. Usually has the pocket passers in a Brohm offense. So he's excited to get some new wrinkles into his offensive scheme this time around with the big bulldozer at quarterback. So also SMU. I can't forget SMU. I think with Kevin Jennings, highlight reel in a bottle. I think he gives them a shot in any given Saturday. And then Big 12. I mean, I know that's been the storyline this week with Texas Tech, but with that controversy on the side, I still think Texas Tech is the top team in the conference. I went down to West Texas last year, made my first trip to Lubbock last year. I got to see this thing live when they played BYU.
I was there.
Yeah, you were there too. Yep. They love college football. They love high school football. I saw a game over at Mojo Odessa Permian. They love football in that part of the country, and they're putting their money up where it counts. And they built a serious playoff contender last year. Their defense, I think, might have been the best in the country overall. But you look at what they brought in again this year. They're reloading. I think they are the team in the Big 12, regardless of who's under center. So that's where we're at with those two conferences.
Wrap things up here. Top three quarterbacks for you. I don't know if this is based on data or just what you've seen, what you feel. Top three quarterbacks nationally.
Wow, top three quarterbacks. I mean, I think I go Trinidad Chambliss. What he was able to do last year was unbelievable, and that was as a transfer, no spring ball. He came in like the third week of the season and just dazzled all year. So I'll start with him. Oh, man, this is tough because I haven't put together the preseason All-American list, so this is going off the top of my head.
Well, let me throw out some names and see if you would put them in there. Arch Manning. Yeah, sure.
Not top three for me, no.
Really? Okay. No. It's interesting because, I mean, I've seen this before. Like, I saw someone I respect fairly much on the national scene. He had Arch Manning fifth in the SEC. I'm like, come on. Are you just hot taking this? Because if you saw Arch the second half of last year, I had him against Oklahoma and I had him against A&M. He was the best player on the field. And he never had a great offensive line. He never had a great running game. I know that's hard to believe at Texas, but he didn't have either. And he still managed to like will that team right on the doorstep of a playoff and won the biggest games of the year. So I'm just wondering what is it that you see lacking in Arch in 2026?
Well, I don't think that it's so much lacking. I think, to your point, he really grew up in the second half of the year. I thought that A&M game was huge for him because he was going up against Marcel Reed. This is the biggest rivalry in the state. And then in the fourth quarter, Reed throws two picks, two crucial picks to flip the game. And then on the other side, Manning takes advantage, wins the game. So I thought that was a huge moment for him. Yeah, he's certainly a contender for this. But I was going to go Chambliss, probably Julian Sand from Ohio State. I thought that he played almost a flawless season up until that Miami game. What I want to find from Saiyan, though, is it's a little bit of you can't really put a term on it, like some late-game moxie when the play breaks down, when the pocket breaks down. Can he create? He didn't show that against Miami. I know that's a tall task against Reuben Bain and Akeem Mesidor, but, you know, a little bit of that fourth quarter and fourth down magic I want to see from Saiyan, but you got to put him up there. Dante Moore at Oregon, yeah, and that's part of the reason why I have them so high. I'll throw him in that discussion. I do like Darian Mensah that we talked about from Miami.
I do too.
I think that what he did at Tulane and Duke, but now surround him with almost NFLers at every position at Miami, I think it's going to increase everybody's playing style. Then you have some wild cards, some roulette chips like I like to throw out. I mean, Kevin Jennings at SMU has been unbelievable for them. Mm-hmm. He played a lot of the season banged up with his leg was injured.
What about a guy like Sam Levitt at LSU, transfer from Arizona State?
Yeah, yes and no. I think that in 2024, he was special. In 25, he had to do a lot more with his legs, which I liked, but some of the passing stats weren't quite there. And, you know, maybe a lot of that's personnel around him. From the Big 12, I would look at maybe Noah Fifita from Arizona. He's been there several years.
Still there. Yeah. All five, 10 of them.
Yeah. Bear Bachmeyer, huge frame. They called him a centaur. He's so big, the quarterback for BYU. Yeah. Maybe not best in the country, but if you're looking conference by conference.
I'll throw out a name that will not have Heisman numbers, but he just wins games and makes plays. Gunnar Stockton.
Absolutely. Georgia. A true winner. I mean, that guy puts his body on the line for his team. You know, a lot to like from him. And you know what? He might get the numbers. I mean, you look at it last year, I think he was right near 3,000 yards, ton of touchdowns. I think something like 35 total touchdowns, only five picks. If he continues that and Georgia makes another SEC title run, he's going to, you know, probably have a seat in New York. He's a contender. I mean, we'll see about a guy like John Mateer. I thought that he would have done a little bit better last year. Now, part of that was a banged up hand. He injured his hand.
I don't think he was ever the same player after that.
Yeah, exactly. So you can't fault him for that. I think now a second year at Oklahoma, a third year in Ben Arbuckle's system, because, of course, he came with him from Wazoo. Look for him to really improve and put up bigger numbers this year. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of contenders. I mean, CJ Carr, we forget because they're not in a conference, but at Notre Dame, I think he was top five quarterback rating. If you look at it efficiency-wise, now you look at him as a second-year starter, second-year bonus, and really a perfect team around him. So, yeah, you could go any one of 15 ways here. That's why I like to do my All-American team, but then also a top 15 positional rankings too. So you see 1 through 15, that's going to be all be in there in the July book.
That gives us an excuse to have you back on in about a month. So we'll do that. I look forward to my copy of Pick Six Previews. Like I said, as someone who likes to do a deep dive to prepare for games, it's as good as anything out there. Brett, you're doing terrific work. Tell the folks out there, if they haven't already gotten your guide, how they can do so when it is out.
Thanks so much, Mike, for having me. I hope to come back on. Hope to get JC on here, talk some South Carolina. He does great coverage as well.
Yeah. He's covering a baseball search. He's already got everything he needs to know on Lenore Sellers, but right now he's got breaking news on a different sport. But he'll be back with us full time next time.
Yeah. Well, you can check out picksixpreviews.com. On there, we have a couple sample pages to see from the preview magazine. We have a digital and a hard copy edition, spiral bound. It ships out early July. If you buy the hard copy, you get the digital as well. That way, for those couple days it's in transit, you get it right away. And then also for the fall, we have a thing called Pick Six Plus. It's a weekly email every Tuesday. It's basically the magazine, but updated every week with new stats, new picks, new projections. Gets you caught up because, you know, you can only watch so many games on Saturday, but this gets you fully caught up for the next week coming up. So you can check samples there too. So picksixpreviews.com, Pick Six Plus.
Awesome. Brett, love your work. So glad we finally had a chance to have you on. And again, it won't be the last time. Thank you so much.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Mike. Have a good one.
You got it. Be well. That is Brett Ciancia of Pick Six Previews, picksixpreviews.com. And that'll do it for us, for JC, who knocked it out of the park the first half, our fearless producer and multitasker, the Mad Dog, Phil Mullinax, Mike Morgan saying thank you so much for tuning us in. Check out avacare.com. Get yourself 20% off, promo code Mike Morgan. We'll see you next week. We'll keep the guest parade going. Tell you about who that'll be probably in a couple of days. JC will put some stuff out on social. For everybody tuning in, thanks a bunch. We'll see you next week on JC and Morgan.